The following sermon was delivered by Rabbi Joshua Davidson on Saturday, June 27, 2015.
In this week's Parasha Chukat, we learn that Moses, after 40 years of trying leadership, will not be permitted to enter the Promised Land. The rabbis struggled to find the reason for his punishment. And there may be no satisfying answer to why. But the search for one, as is so often the case with Torah study, yields some very beautiful insights. We'll begin by reading the Torah verses, which are in the center of the handout that you received, at the top labeled Shabbat Chukat. The narrative context is significant. The Israelites have been complaining against Moses and Aaron for the fact that they have no water to drink, and they return to that familiar trope, you should have left us in Egypt rather than to die here of thirst in the wilderness. Numbers chapter 20, verses 6 through 12. Please follow with me. Moses and Aaron came away from the congregation to the entrance to the tent of meeting. Fell on their faces. God presented God's divine self to them, and God spoke thus to Moses, "You and your brother Aaron should take the rod and assemble the community. Before its very eyes, order the rock to issue forth its water. Thus you shall produce water for them from the rock and provide drink for the congregation and their beasts." Moses and Aaron assembled the congregation in front of the rock, and he said to them, "Listen, you rebels, shall we get water for you from this rock?" Moses raised his hand and twice struck the rock with his rod. Out came abundant water, and the community and its beasts drank. But Adonai said to Moses and Aaron, "Because you did not trust me enough to affirm my sanctity in the sight of the Israelite people, you shall not lead this congregation into the land that I have given them." So I ask you, is the punishment fair? Does the punishment fit the crime? If so, why? If not, why not? Thoughts? Raise your hand, I'll call. Yes, please, call it out. It's not fair. Okay. Is that Betty Jane, is that you? Why is it not fair? Okay, so Betty Jane's answer is that God gave no instruction about whether to talk to the rock, strike the rock, just assemble the people. Well, it's ambiguous because in this passage itself, God's instruction is somewhat clear. God says, you find it? Order the rock to issue forth its water. So that's a verbal command that Moses is supposed to give. But within the context of Torah, it is somewhat ambiguous because this is not the first time Moses has approached a rock to draw forth water. And in the previous instance, what was it that God ordered him to do? Right, speak and then strike. So he was given permission to, in fact, strike the rock on a previous occasion. So it is ambiguous. Moses could have thought, well, I should do what God instructed me to do last time. Okay, so he didn't do exactly what God ordered this time. So was the punishment fair, even if he didn't do exactly what God ordered? Thoughts? The difference is the anger. Okay, what do you mean by that? Okay. So in this instance, there was an emotion that Moses brought to the act of striking the rock, and it was an anger. The rabbis wrestle with why it was that Moses received this punishment. Clearly, they don't think on the face of the text it's fair. And so they try to lift up other reasons. And one of the reasons they lift up is this anger that Moses brings to the act. And they question whether it was a justified anger or not. So look on the page, the top left corner, the teaching from Yad Yosef. And this gets to this very question of Moses' anger. According to Maimonides, the main sin of Moses and Aaron was in the language with which they spoke to Israel. Listen, you rebels. To be sure, many of the prophets of Israel spoke with sharpness in similar language. But here it was inappropriate, since the children of Israel sought water, incontestably an urgent matter of life and death for a person. There was no reason to speak to them harshly. After all, they needed water in order to survive. The anger, Maimonides says, is what the sin was, and that's what warranted the punishment. But if we look to the Torah itself, we can actually find a different explanation, God's explanation. It's in verse 12. But Adonai said to Moses and Aaron, because you did not trust me enough to affirm my sanctity in the sight of the Israelite people, you shall not lead this congregation into the land that I have given them. So what's God's explanation for the punishment? How did they fail to sanctify God? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear. They were like the 10 spies, okay, the 10 spies who are pessimists. They didn't trust. So, but what's the demonstration that they didn't trust? Yeah, Wendell. So they don't mention God's name in the act of drawing forth the water from the rock. It could be that they, in fact, didn't trust that God would bring the water forth, but whether they trusted or not, they do not mention God's name in the act of bringing forth the water. And in omitting God from this miracle, they fail to sanctify God in the act. Okay, turn the page over. We're going to look at two texts now from Numbers Rabbah, dating to about the 9th century. At the top, it's number 10. Because ye believed not in me. But had not Moses previously said something that was worse than this? For he said, if flocks and herds be slain for them, will they suffice them? Or if all the fish of the sea be gathered together for them, will they suffice them? That's back in Numbers 11. Faith surely was wanting there too, and to a greater degree than in the present instance. Why then did he not make the decree against him on that occasion? Let me illustrate. To what may this be compared? To the case of a king who had a friend. Now this friend displayed arrogance towards the king privately, using harsh words. The king, however, did not lose his temper with him. After a time, he rose and displayed his arrogance in the presence of his legions, and the king passed sentence of death upon him. So also the Holy One, blessed be he, said to Moses, the first offense that you committed was a private matter between you and me. Now, however, that it is done in the presence of the public, it is impossible to overlook it. As it says, to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel. So what's the difference between Moses' expression of doubt in the past and here now? Yeah? Well, they're not quite yet in the Promised Land. They're on the verge of the Promised Land. The difference is one of who's hearing the doubt. In the past, it was only God who heard Moses' expression of doubt. Here, he's expressing doubt in the presence of the entire people of Israel. And why is that distinction significant? Yeah? Precisely. It's not, as Wendell said, it's not a very good role model if Moses is doing this in the presence of the people, because if he's doubting, they will likely doubt as well. And this really does bring us back to Rita's parallel to the 10 spies, because the 10 spies were also leaders of the people. And when they stand before the people and express doubt in God's promise, that impacts the people's own outlook. It's one thing for Moses to express doubt to God in the privacy of their own interaction inside the tent. But when Moses is expressing pessimism about the future in the hearing of the entire people, then that can unravel the entire effort of attempting to reach the promised land. I have to say, though, that for me, none of these explanations are truly satisfying. Because here's Moses, who has led the people for 40 trying years in the desert, constantly backsliding, constantly complaining. And yet he carries them on his shoulders to the threshold of the promised land. And then in this moment of frustration, he strikes the rock instead of talking to it. And for that, he'll never make it across the Jordan River. And according to the Midrash, Moses is furious, enraged. He sees it as entirely unfair. And he draws a circle around himself, and he stands inside this circle, and he defiantly threatens God, Master of the universe, I will not budge until you void this unfair decree. But no circle can protect him. His death may be terribly unfair, but life is not fair. We do not live forever. Those we love don't live forever. Bad things do happen to good people. This is the way of the world. We don't need Moses' story to remind us what our own experiences have sadly already taught us. But Moses will not be without reward. And there's a very beautiful midrash with which I would conclude. It's number 13, the lower right. The Holy One, blessed be He, said to Moses, "With what countenance do you request to enter the land?" This may be illustrated by a parable. It is like the case of a shepherd who went out to feed the king's flock. The flock was carried off as booty. When the shepherd sought to enter the royal palace, the king said to him, "If you come in now, what will people say? That it was you who have caused the flock of Israel to be carried off." So in the present case also the Holy One, blessed be He, said to Moses, "Your glory is that you've taken out of bondage 60 myriads of people, but you have buried them in the wilderness and will bring into the land a different generation. This being so, people will think that the generation of the wilderness have no share in the world to come. No, better be beside them, and you shall in the time to come enter with them. As it says, for there the portion of the lawgiver is hidden, that he might come at the head of the people. He executed the righteousness of the Lord. Therefore it is written, ye shall not bring this assembly, but the one that had come out of Egypt with you." What is Moses' reward? He will have the distinction of leading God's flock into Olam Haba, the world to come, where our tradition says, the righteous shall all have their reward.